Hi, this is Craig Valentine, host of Early to Rise Radio. Have you ever wanted to become wealthier, healthier, wiser, or just have more time to appreciate the finer things in life? On this show, we reveal what high performers are doing every day to be more successful without sacrificing their personal lives. Early to Rise Radio is sponsored by the Perfect Day Formula. Get your free copy of this game-changing success guide at freeperfectdaybook.com. Now let's get started with today's show. I'm here with Magic Mike Zeller, and we are going to show you how to overcome your imposter syndrome and find the genius within. Ready to go, Mike?
Yes, sir. Let's rock, baby.
Let's do it. Mike Zeller, welcome to the show.
Craig, dude, so great connecting as always.
This is going to be a lot of fun. So, you know, you got a brand new book out on the genius within, and I'm going to grill you on that because there's four key things in that, that were listed. I haven't read the book yet, but, you know, four key things that are listed in the Amazon review that I really got to ask you about, and I also want to ask you about how the heck you wrote it with the help of my book, of course, a little self-serving, but why don't you give us a little bit of background around the genius within and who you wrote it for? I know that you work with a lot of entrepreneurs, and then a quick summary of how the heck you sold $300 million worth of products and services over the years and added so much value to people.
Yeah, dude. First of all, honor connecting with you. Your book had a huge, huge impact in my life. And I just honestly love, this is our first time connecting mano-a-mano in a deep level on podcast, but I love how you show up and you've impacted me deeply and just literally reoriented my morning routines for now going on a little over a year after I read Perfect Week Formula. So,
yeah. But how did you find my stuff in the first place?
It was maybe Bedros. Because I met Bedros at another mastermind event, and I know you guys are partners or collaborators in a lot of ways.
Yeah, we do some stuff together.
Yeah, and then but Perfect Day Formula, great title, great book as well. And then as I journeyed in, one of the biggest things as an entrepreneur mentor, something that I get asked, position. I somehow attract people during seasons of transition. Okay. And when I'm, when people are looking for their next thing, or they feel restless or longing for something more, I could not give someone a formulaic exact response of like, hey, I did this, this is what you should do too. And I felt like that sort of advice, like I got advice from another mentor that I paid a lot of money for. And he basically told me exactly what he would do, but it wasn't right for me because I was wired differently. And I was like, had different longings and passions for that season of life. And then just as I started mentoring a lot of entrepreneurs from around the world, I've mentored over 300 entrepreneurs now. And I saw that people had different strengths and they had different unique relationship pools. They say your network is your net worth. And then they had different values and passions. And if someone had all the same values, all the same strengths, but had different life experiences, then they would also be wired or set up for something different. And so I started looking, like there's really four main quadrants that give you clues about your next steps, about your genius. So that's how I came up with that.
Yeah, I'm going to dive deep into those four key areas that, as you say in the book, and cover the clues of your genius, because everybody listening wants to go, well, I want to know my genius so that they can use it for more success in life. But again, you sold $300 million worth of stuff. You've got the NLP side of things. You've worked with Tony Robbins and so many big names. So just, real quick, like, who is Mike Zeller? How the heck did Mike Zeller get to where he is today?
I'm a guy that... I got inspired by this story from a pastor in LA, Irwin McManus. He said, hey, I want to be, Irwin, describing himself, said, I want to be a poisonous mushroom eater. The tribesmen, the nomad, you know, think of a tribe wandering through a forest. Well, you get a couple guys going ahead and they're testing out mushrooms. Some of them might be truffles. Some of them might be a portobello. Some of them might be, another type of mushroom. And then some of them might be poisonous. But you got to have those that are willing to put their neck on the line and discover and innovate. And I'm kind of that. I like to try things. I know I'm going to fail at more things than I'm going to succeed at. But as a result, now I've had so many different careers. I've a lot of my sales and revenue initially came from real estate. I was in real estate for 15 plus years.
Was that back in LA?
That was in Nashville. Yeah.
Okay.
And then I had an automotive dealership, a socially minded car dealership where we, we did 25, 30 million a year in sales. And then we gave away cars to single mothers in need every year. And that was just part of our ethos. And we were highest rated car dealership in the Southeast at the time when I owned it. And when I had two partners as well that were amazing. But I also knew I remember writing down, I don't know if you teach or have done affirmations, but when I was 31, inspired by Tony Robbins' personal power, I'd some of the brightest and best people in the world. And at the time, I was just selling real estate and investing in real estate. I was like, hey, how the heck am I going to do this? But I felt like I was supposed to write it down. I felt that leading, that nudge that I mentor and lead some of the brightest and best people in the world. And sure enough, 4 or 5 years later, I had just more and more people reaching out, asking me to help guide them in their next chapter of their entrepreneurial careers.
And was a lot of that just they had been seeing you doing stuff? I'm like, man, what is this guy doing? I got to figure it out. And I'm just going to go and ask him for help.
Yeah, I'd get hit up every day, it seemed like, for, hey, Mike, can I get 30 minutes of your time? Hey, can we grab coffee? Can we do this? And at first, I was like, first 6 months, I was just doing it for free.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you went through that journey a little bit, too. And then I'd be like, oh, I just poured in my heart and my soul. And this guy's life is going to change. And then, look, a month later, nothing's happened because no skin in the game, no commitment. And then I was like, I got to start charging. And I was like, hey, I make 500 to 1,000 bucks an hour in my work. So I got to charge 500 to 1,000 bucks an hour for my coaching. And that's what I started doing.
Yeah. So let's go back to Irwin for a second, because I had never heard of Irwin McManus until this year. And then my friend Joel Marion had Irwin speak at two of his mastermind groups that I'm in, the 100 million mastermind group. And, you know, he is a real fascinating guy, you know, starting a church in LA for, you know, just everyday folk, I guess. And then, you know, he's written a lot of books. Where did you meet him? And what were some of the other lessons that you learned from him? Because he's such an interesting person.
Yeah. You know, he was one of my earliest mentors. When I was in grad school, I got my master's in Christian leadership. So it's like an MBA with a theology twist.
Wow.
And I met Irwin while I was in seminary, and I was just riveted. I was like, I resonated with him more than anyone at the time, more than anyone else in the world that I'd ever met or heard speak. Mm-hmm. And so when I moved to LA, I interned at Mosaic. I was in his first internship group. Played basketball at his house, like hung out with him, played football with him, you know, like all those things. And brilliant guy, heart of gold, been through the gamut, futurist. He's one of the most prophetic, dynamic speakers I've ever met. The only guy I would outrank him as a speaker in my mind, Tony Robbins.
Wow. That's...
And he's brilliant. I love Irwin.
Yeah, high praise, my man. High praise. So, all right, people are probably wondering what the heck are these four, you know, kind of pillars of unlocking your genius and figuring out what the heck it is. Because, you know, I'm an optimistic person like you. The people really do have a genius within them, and it's frustrating when people don't see that genius within themselves, or they can't find it. And it's marvelous and magic when they finally do, and what they're capable of achieving. So, walk us through those four key areas. I'll just let you share them.
Yeah. The first one I would consider unique talents. So the reason I came up with that is, you know, I did a Myers-Briggs test in college when I was 20 years old. And I was like, I'm an INTP. And I was like, oh, this is so spot on. And then a few years later, I did the DISC test. And I was like, oh, this shows some other things that I didn't realize. Then I did a StrengthsFinder and found, oh, these are my top five strengths: ideation, relation, intellection and all these connectedness. And then I did the wealth dynamics test, which shows you your natural pathway for building wealth, the only test that measures that. Then I did the Kolbe index. I was like, all these tests measure something different. So, you know, when you look at your talents, the way I like to think about it is like, the goal is to accumulate as many clues as possible, because you have an unfair advantage when you have more clarity, more perception. Think of one of my favorite metaphors is like a blind man touching an elephant. If he only touches one part of it, he doesn't know if it's an elephant. If he touches the skin or the tail or the hoof, he doesn't know if it's an elephant or a rhinoceros or whatever. But then he touches the nostril. Now he knows, it's probably an elephant. Then, but he still doesn't know if it's an African elephant or an Asian elephant. Like, there's so many different dimensions. Same thing for us as human beings. The problem is our clues are scattered throughout our lives. And I thought, as I was asked to guide people, I was like, I need to get more clues before I can guide someone appropriately. So now when I onboard clients, I have them do a deep dive into certain personality tests. I want them to go through the full, ideally go through the full Genius Within, where they go through inventory of your key relationships as well. Like, you know, I found when I was in real estate, I was naturally drawn to authors and thinkers like yourself. Even though I had all these, like, I still have four or five friends that have $100 million real estate portfolios. But I'd rather talk to another author, another thinker, another idea creator. And I had an unusual cluster of best-selling authors as friends, even though I hadn't written a book. That was a clue. And then, you know, I can go on through the defining life experiences and the values and passions. But I wanted to pause there in case, you know, you want to dive in any deeper on any one of those two.
Well, one thing that I've wanted to ask you ever since we started, you know, talking before the interview was, you had a very successful real estate business, just like I had a very successful fitness business. And people usually have two questions. Why did you stop? And then how on earth did you transition? Because most people, I wouldn't say they have a fixed mindset, but they just can't fathom the idea of somebody being excellent in one thing and then leaving it behind and going on and becoming, you know, even decent, let alone excellent at another thing. So, you know, why'd you leave and how were you able to make that transformation?
Yeah. You know, I was in Buenos Aires, Argentina, inspired by the 4-hour work week and doing a mini sabbatical back in 2010, I think it was. And I was like, hey, if I just do real estate the rest of my life, my soul is going to die. And I was already 3 years into real estate. This is all I do. I just felt it's going to be done, right? Like I would be very successful and a multimillionaire and all that jazz, but I would be bored. And so, you know, one of my other yearnings and passions, and then if I look at the wealth dynamics, I'm a creator on the wealth dynamics, which means the thing that juices me in life is creation. Is birthing things. That's why, you know, I'm 42 years old and really been a serious entrepreneur for about 10 years. And I've started 16, 17 different ventures and probably another 5 or 6 LLCs that almost got off the ground. And so, you know, I think transitions are messy, but our skills are transferable. One of the things that we, you know, oftentimes we go through something set up. It's a setup rather than a setback. And so like all the things that you learned in your gym, the things that I learned in real estate, I learned how to relate. I learned how to connect. I learned how to market. I learned how to sell. I learned how to listen. I learned how to handle customer complaints and issues. Learned how to build a reputation. And now all those things are transferable to the next career. And that's the cool thing about our generation is we can recreate ourselves a million times, really. It's messy and we would lose momentum if we keep doing it too much, but passion and purpose.
Yeah, I love that because that's exactly why I left the fitness thing. It was quote unquote easy. I knew it inside and out. I was able to help people and I was able to reach people, but I just got tired of it, you know, telling people the workouts to do. And, you know, there was a lot of young people coming in with more energy. And so I decided to lead that to something I'm much more excited about doing. So I'm glad we were able to have that chat because I think a lot of people, you know, whether they hit 35, 45, 55, 60, 65, 70, you know, everybody's like, not everybody, but a lot of people want to try different things. So that's great. Let's go down a little bit on the defining life experiences, because everybody's got a defining life experience. How do they pull their genius out of that?
Yeah. You know, one of my favorite examples, Theodore Roosevelt. Do you know much about old Teddy Roosevelt?
You know, I don't. I know, I was just on another podcast and we were talking about Dwight Eisenhower, and I've read a lot about him, but I'm more of a World War II history buff. So I read about that period of time, but not so much, you know, early, I wouldn't say it's early America, but, you know, turn of the century into the 20th century. So no, I don't. So educate me.
Yeah. So old Teddy, so he was known for being a big hunter, but before he became a hunter, he struggled mightily with asthma, and his family thought he was going to be a weakling, because he was a weakling as a little kid and up until his teenager years. But he disciplined himself and started riding horses, just in getting outdoors, working out, weightlifting. And this is in, you know, 1800s, late 1800s. And because he's like, I got to overcome this asthma. I got to figure it out. And sure enough, by the time he's around 20 years old, he develops real strength and he is an outdoorsman, an avid hunter. Then age 22, he's married, birth of his first child and his daughter. His wife dies in childbirth. 24 hours later, his mom dies. What's he do? He retreats to the wilderness. He hands off his daughter to his aunt, because he's like, I'm in no shape to care. I'm grieving. I can't care for an infant. I don't even know what to do. You know, men in the late 1800s today, you know, we're metrosexual enough. I guess we can probably figure it out to some extent. But back then, you know, this is frontiersman.
Yeah.
And he goes to North Dakota and South Dakota and hunts and lives in the wilderness for like 6 months. And his soul is just rejuvenated. His spirit is stirred. He comes back and re-enters into politics shortly thereafter, eventually becomes governor of New York, also police chief of New York City, reforms corruption. Why didn't he reform corruption? Hey, he watched his dad rail against the corruption in politics, in the police, in business. And his dad, in fact, died of cancer because of all the stress fighting against the corruption that he saw in New York City at the time. Then he eventually is the Republican Party puts him in or whichever party, I think it was a Republican that he was part of, puts him in as the vice president on the vice president ticket for the president of the U.S. because he's like, hey, he can't do any damage if he's the vice president. 6 weeks, I think it was, or 2 months after he's in office, the president dies and he becomes president of the U.S.
And what, now, was that Harding? Was that Harding?
I think it was Harding. Yeah.
Yeah. He's like the shortest presidential.
Yeah.
Term.
Yeah, exactly. And Teddy becomes the president and obviously is reelected. What's he do in office? He breaks up the monopolies. Teddy Roosevelt broke up Standard Oil. Standard Oil in 1900, which I read Titan by Rockefeller.
Yeah.
Amazing. Have you read it?
I've read about the third of it. I never got through it.
Yeah. It's an intense book. But at the time, Standard Oil's GDP was equivalent almost to the U.S. economy, which is insane. Like the company, one company as big as the whole U.S. economy. And Teddy breaks it up and makes Chevron and Exxon and all these other companies that now exist. And then he parks, because going back to the suffering and back to his overcoming, he's like, hey, I want to preserve the beauty of America for future generations. And so those are all defining life moments that he had to face. The obstacle becomes the way, we know, yeah. Right? So if we look at our lives are littered with clues. My goal, my process when you go through the Genius Within is we want to assemble all the clues for the first time ever in your life. What if you assemble all the clues about your whole life experience that are there? Get them all on one table, not spread out. It's almost like Jim Collins in Good to Great. We've all read Jim Collins' books and stuff. Well, what's he do? He gathers all the data and looks for the patterns to emerge, patterns to pop like popcorn. And I think for your life, and then the patterns will pop like popcorn.
Fascinating, man. Fascinating. One other thing, I know we have the four key areas, but one other thing that you write about in this book is the life-death exercise, an analysis of your time and energy so that you can include more of what you love and less of what you don't. The heck is that?
So when you go through the whole, you know, the first one, find your unique talents. Second, your key relationships. Third, your defining life moments. And the fourth, your values and passions. What lights you up? What do you stand for? What do you stand against? What are you insatiably curious about? Those are all clues. And your body doesn't lie. It's why the FBI doesn't do a lie detector test on your words. It does it on your body. So what do you do? And what I want people to do is when they do the exercise, you connect with your heart. You're in a centered, almost meditative state. And then you look back at your last week. You look back at your last month, you know, like you have in your book, inventorying all the things you're doing during the course of the week. Well, look at the things that bring you life. And if you don't, sometimes we get in ruts where almost nothing we're doing in our life is bringing us life. So you might have to go further than the last month to find the things that bring you life. And you take a note of the things that bring you life. For example, I love dinner parties, cocktails, great workouts, adventure, travel, learning, trying out new things. But if I'm doing repetitive tasks and repetitive meetings, I want to shoot myself eventually. But then you also take an inventory on all the things that bring you death. And literally it's as simple as taking one sheet of paper. You can obviously get the workbook and all that, but you can just do one sheet of paper, write life at the top, on the backside of the paper, write death. And then just inventory everything that brings you death. Like, oh, taking out the trash, making dinner brings me death. Whatever, small talk brings me death. Administrative tasks bring me death. Write those things out. And then the goal is to delete almost week by week or month by month, delete three things, the bottom easiest things from your from your death list, and then add three things from your life list. So if I schedule in, you know, you're super disciplined about schedule, schedule in my life the things that bring me life. And guess what? What will happen if you're in your work, like one of my CEO clients, he's almost an eight-figure film studio. He started, when we first started meeting, his whole schedule, his whole life was filled with things that brought him death. And he's a creator. He's a creative, like he, and his company just had a record year. And he's like, and he was battling depression. We do one session, one full day session. By the end of it, we had clarity on why he was just, he had no passion, no fervency, no desire for his work anymore. Even though like he needed to be, like he had to be disciplined for his, like he has to produce for his family, all those things, right? And his clients, but he was doing all these administrative things that he thought he was supposed to do because this is what CEOs do. But then going back to your unique genius, his unique genius is not to be an executive CEO doing, making all these meetings and fine tuning the machine. He needs to make radical leaps, the creative big leaps. He needs space. So as we started deleting things from the schedule, literally 3 weeks later, he's filled with energy and joy again for his work, not battling depression anymore. Because we had deleted 50% of the stuff off his plate that no longer brought him life.
That's powerful, man. That's like the automate, delegate, eliminate stuff that we do in our business. And it's a great exercise.
Yeah.
What about, you know, this sounds like it's similar to overcoming common genius blockers and habits that are sabotaging your dreams. And that's another big section of your book. So walk me through that one.
Yeah. So a lot of things block us. One is perfection. I call them the evil twin sisters of progress, procrastination and perfectionism. And they're really the same in many regards. And so that's a big genius blocker. When you think of, all right, I can't get this done because I don't have the time to do it perfect or whatever. Well, one of the easiest ways, like we were talking before we started about one of your clients that's writing a book. Well, you know, my first thing, what I've found is if I get the first 80%, the goal, and I got this from Dan Sullivan in his great book, 80% Approach. But if my goal is to my first iteration, just get it the first 80%, not 100%. And my mind actually subconsciously relaxes. And then I'm like, it's a hard paradigm to switch to, but where I'm like, okay, if the first iteration is flawed and imperfect, like for me writing my book, I was like, you know what? My thoughts are not going to be perfect. My ideas are not going to be perfect. I'm just going to mind map it and then voice talk each thing out and then get it AI transcribed, which again has a lot of flaws. And then I collected and soon enough I had 40 or 50 pages in a couple hours. And now I had the first little chunk and then I can go back and edit it and improve it. The goal is, how do I keep improving something 80%? GE's Six Sigma process, you're probably familiar with that, or a lot of people are in the industrial side. It's really six iterations. They get to the world's platinum standard for manufacturing excellence by six iterations of improving something 80% instead of trying to get something all the way to 100%. So the first genius blocker is eradicate procrastination by just moving forward on that first 80% and being okay with it's going to be deeply flawed.
You know, the one thing I like about, well, I mean, there's a lot of things I like about that, but the big thing is, and I was talking to my wife about this today, is that everybody knows what to do, but there's this inertia of getting started. And as soon as you get started, you generally are willing to keep going. And you know, that's actually physics, right? It's the inertia that needs to overcome, you know, to get the mass moving. But once the mass is in motion, then all of a sudden things will start to go a whole lot, you know, more consistent. And with humans, it's when we get through that inertia and we are able to get the momentum and it gives us a dopamine hit. It brings us motivation to come back and do it again and again and again. And that's why we have to keep streaks going so that we fight off that procrastination. But also, you know, to your point, like I don't cover enough, perhaps, I think, on the perfection side of things. It's that 80%, like you said, get something done, even if it's bad, and then move forward with that, right?
Yeah.
Absolutely. Okay, so then with that, this is probably a good time to switch over to how you use the Perfect Week formula, my book, to write your book. I love this story. It's absolutely amazing. It should inspire people to realize like, wow, they can really get a lot done in a short amount of time because there's so many people that listen to my podcast that want to write a book or want to start a business or whatever it is. And they just can't overcome that inertia and find the time. So what did you do?
Yeah. So my wife, it's October. We had a surprise pregnancy. We were not planning on getting pregnant. Oh. And then my wife in November starts getting really rough first trimester blues. Like it's just, I don't know how your wife is handling pregnancy, but man, it was rough. And she's going to bed at 9:30. She could only eat gummy bears. It's basically all she could eat is gummy bears. For like a couple of weeks and going to bed at 9:30 at night. And I was like, you know what? I guess I'll go to bed then too. And I was reading in the middle of reading your book. And I was like, you know what? I should get up earlier and I'll just start writing my book. And sure enough, I'm getting up at 4:30 a.m. I got my genius supplements. My little reward was I love this like watermelon flavored genius supplements. Blend it up. Then I'll make my matcha latte. I make a delicious matcha latte and I'm going to be writing from 5 until 8, you know, I'd have my little 30 minute routine. Normally what I would do, I used to do like an hour and a half to 2 hour routine, but you talked about one of the coolest things about the book and why it was so transforming for me is you emphasize, and I wholeheartedly believe this, use the very best hours where you're freshest, where you have least obligations, least on your time for your most important, not necessarily most urgent. Like you have the whole Eisenhower matrix in there and everything. Use the people that are most effective in the world. They focus on the most, or they focus on important, but not urgent quadrant much more than the urgent and all the other things. And I was like, you know what? This book is not urgent, but it's very important for me to get done. So I just started cranking on that every day, 6 days a week. I still take one day as a Sabbath, but I would crank for 6 days. And sure enough, I was essentially done with the first draft, roughly 4 or 5 weeks later and ready to go.
Insane. That's insane. Like, think about that. It's like a book I know as an entrepreneur, like a book can change your life. And to even have, like even if you got half done in 4 weeks, that is an insane transition inflection point in somebody's life. So walk us through like the rest of it and like, you know, how people can get it and you know, what they're going to, the outcome that they're going to get from when they find the genius within them.
Well, one of my favorite was in my early 20s, I heard this leadership talk where they talked about this Harvard researcher named Dee Hawk, who is founder of Visa, as in Visa credit cards. And the talk was on self-leadership. And this Harvard researcher found that the very best leaders in the world, because after Dee sold his equity in Visa, and he started researching the very best leaders in the world. Like, what do they do that normal leaders, one thing that other leaders didn't do? They focused more than 50% of their leadership energy on leading themselves, not leading others, not leading their team, not leading their customers, not leading up, not leading down, not leading sideways, leading themselves. So it's that self-mastery, you know, part of what you teach, right? And so then I go back to Socrates. Really, we wouldn't have democracy without Socrates. Socrates had this quote, said, "To know thyself is the beginning of all wisdom." Then we go into the Bible, King David, one of the wiser men, and Solomon. Proverbs 16:32, "Better to have self-control than to conquer a city." Better to have self-control than to conquer a city, all right? So I just saw this cascading message. And then I started studying. I was like, hey, why did I went through a season of failure. I lost over $1 million. I was like, oh, why did I fail? Why did I also succeed early on, right? And why did I succeed when I succeed, and why did I fail? Well, when I succeed, I typically was putting myself in an extraordinarily right position. It was in alignment with my values, my talents, my timing. I had a team around me that was also there in line in their genius. And so that's part of how the process came about. I was like, all right, I've got to put this, package this and productize and make it easy for others to do the same. And now I've had people from many different countries reading the book and experiencing life change. I get, you know, reviews and messages almost every day now. It's pretty cool.
It is really cool. And I know you've been impacting people from around the world for a long, long time. But even when, you know, when you get a message from somebody from, you know, Africa, from Australia, from England, you know, from somebody like, I've never met this person in my life, and you get this message about how it's been impacted.
Even if it's, you know, another state over, it's amazing. It's like, I'm not sure. Do you typically help? I know we all talked to you earlier, like a lot of people call you for a transition. So what does your coaching look like?
Yeah, thanks for asking, Craig. My coaching is really focused on two main things. I work with a lot of 7-8-figure. Alan Wayne, who's built a $100 million e-commerce brand, Redline Steel. So him and I are partners on that. But then thought leaders. The other one is what I consider the aligned and prosperous expert thought leader. So I have six pillars that I've found that people have to go through. First, you got to have your money mindset and self-worth has to be aligned. Second, you got to know your zone of genius. Where can you be one of the best in the world or best in your industry or your niche or your area? Third, you got to find your 4% client. Who's your 4% client? This is the client that can produce 64% of your revenue. So if you go to the 80-20 principle, top 20% produces 80% of results. Well, the top 20% of the top 20% is 4%. Can they produce 80% of 80%, which is 64% of your revenue? 100%. Richard Coe talks about an 80-20 principle. Perry Marshall and his sales and marketing, 80-20. It happened over and over and over again. And then you create an irresistible offer. There's a psychology of an irresistible offer for that 4% client. And then fifth is you build and develop your bona fide expert authority in that niche. And then the sixth is you build and develop your A player team. So I've been trying to figure out, like, over the years, I've been formulating and figuring out, hey, why do some of these people just hum? Like, I have one client that was a hairstylist when I started with her. Now she's about to have her, she'll probably do $2 million this month in the launch. And she'll do almost $7 or $8 million. Like last year, as of March 2020, she was a hairstylist and coaching on the side. Then COVID shut down her hair salon. She did over $1 million last year. This year she'll do $7 or $8 million. And then next year she'll do over 8 figures as a coach and expert.
And what'd she do?
She coaches, she's mostly in the social selling scene, meaning the network marketing, high performing network marketers.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. So amazing. She hit
that. Yeah, it really truly is like amazing where, you know, like you meet some people to do 8-figure businesses and maybe you knew them before and you're like, I can't even remember you as that person who wasn't making even $100,000 a year. It's like, you should have been doing this all the time, but everybody needs like to unlock their genius, which is amazing that you do that, right?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And when you do it, the big thing for me is like, I want people to win at business and win at life and do like, I think you can have deep impact, immense fulfillment, and great prosperity when you get aligned with all like just who you are and in the right positioning. It's not easy and it's a journey. But it's the clues are there and you just have to move towards it step by step. And I've seen it happen over and over.
How do you help people overcome imposter syndrome?
Ooh, I love that question. One of the biggest things I've been asking people is what if the real imposter is your imposter syndrome? What if your highest self is your truest self? And so the imposter syndrome is the ultimate fake. And the upper limit problem is often what I call it as well. So you hit this invisible ceiling of like, I'm not worthy of more than this, or I can't earn more, or who am I to do this or that? So it's often messages from childhood or something that you've accepted as true. One of the biggest ways is to flip it, is to go from a new perspective. What did Einstein do in terms of creating radical breakthroughs? He couldn't do any scientific experiments on quantum physics back then, or at least a lot of them, right? What did he do? He went to new perspectives. He started imagining the scenario from a radically new perspective. So for me, I overcome imposter syndrome and I help others overcome it by a process, NLP process I call Claim Your Power, which is where you take your old disempowering self, the one that is the victim of imposter syndrome, where you play small, and you give that person a name, him or her a name. For example, when I did this, I went through a season where I lost $1 million in 2018 and 2019. Brutal. And I also got married during that season, which was not, and I'm a type 3 Enneagram. So I'm like high achiever and I'm failing some more. And all these things are happening. And I was like, all right, I got to name that. I got to stop the spiral. And so I named my weak disempowering self, weak ass Willie. And I was like, weak ass Willie, what is your good intent? What are you trying to do? He's trying to protect me from not screwing up again. Then I had to do, what's my most power? When I show up at my best, what is the name of that version of me? Magic Mike was the name. In fact, on my little bracelet that my wife got me, it's Magic Mike, because I had a client call me Magic Mike because I was creating magic in her life and she loved it. And so now, I ask myself in my affirmations every day, I am Magic Mike. I show up with power, magnetism, you know, unleash people's genius, all these things. I'm a money magnet. I create radical transformation, all these things. So that alter ego, Todd Herman talks about it as well in his book. But creating, naming and claiming your higher perspective and then asking that part of you to lead while thinking. Another psychological trick is to think that disempowering part of you, because they always have a good intent. And like our wife, and when our wives are upset, my wife gets upset at me sometimes. You might be really good and not ever have your wife upset at you. But when my wife gets upset at me, until she feels heard and acknowledged, doesn't matter what I say. It doesn't matter if I have the greatest solution in the world or if I just hit a home run. Doesn't matter. But it's same thing with that alter ego, that disempowering alter ego. I need to thank it, make sure it feels heard and appreciated, and then release it from controlling my life. So I'll literally say, weak ass Willie, I release you from guiding my life today. Magic Mike, you're leading.
That's awesome. That's awesome. I mean, that is really, 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 really helpful. And because so many people deal with that, especially through their transition phases. And so I'm really, really glad I asked you that. Mike, before we wrap, Magic Mike, before we wrap things up here, where can everyone find your book? I know it's on Amazon, but any other special places you want people to go and get it from?
Yeah, you can go to thegeniuswithinbook.com and you get it free. Just cover the shipping there. And then also I have a free 6 steps to finding your genius guide. Just text the word genius you to 474747. And that's the letter U, genius you to 4747 on Instagram, social media, all the spots, YouTube, LinkedIn, Facebook, etc. at the Mike Zeller, and then MikeZeller.com as well. And then one other thing I want to mention, though, Craig, like you didn't pay me to do this, but dude, your book, literally for the rest of my life. Now, guess what? I have more confidence that I can crank through something quick. And now I still do that same principle, even though I'm not writing a book right now. I came up with my 33-day to abundance journal right here. I wrote that in July. I did that in 2 weeks. And really, I did it in about 8 hours. Partly because of what I learned from your book. And I'm going to write 2 more books next year, thanks to your process. And I literally still minimize my morning routine to about. Curious, when do you do your studying time? Like your deep studying time? How do you schedule that in? I still am battling.
I do that right after the dog walk that I do with my wife, but before we have breakfast together. So I'm up at 4, I do the work, then, she gets up and we kind of hang out for a bit. Then we go walk the dog around 7. Then when we come back in, we do Spanish lessons now that we're here in Mexico. And then I go and study. I never used to watch YouTube videos, but now I'm watching some YouTube videos. And so I do that study then I have breakfast, and then I go to the gym. So that's when I do that sort of stuff. If it's a slower day, like today's not a slow day, I've had a lot of podcasts, but I might do a little bit more study right now and then a little bit of reading before bed. So that's when I do that. When do you do yours?
I kind of do it at night a little bit, but I look for spurts in the morning, but I have not been as disciplined on my deep study time. And then I do some on Sundays. I end up having a lot of deep study.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, just put the appointment in for me, it's like, just watch one 10-minute YouTube video and take notes on it. And so it doesn't have to be like an hour long or something. It's still study. I still definitely got something out of it. I can apply it. I can deploy it. Like, my whole thing is going to learn one thing that I can then share with my team that then they can deploy, 5 people can deploy it. Like, that's just leverage in terms of like, it's exponential learning, because it's like 5 people learn something from one person's study. Now, if you get 5 people sharing one thing with 5 people, that's 25 things they learn, 25 different learnings that can be applied. So we're always looking to do that. So I love it, man. This has been awesome. I love everything that you shared from thegeniuswithinbook.com, and also for recommending that people get perfectweekformula.com so that they can make more time for what matters. So, dude, this is really, really awesome. I appreciate your time. Awesome catching up, and a couple of kids with a German background and hard workers, efficient and all that sort of stuff. So it's really, really great to connect. And I know that we're going to do a lot more in the future.
Likewise. Can't wait.